Governor Cuomo has something called his Energy Highway. We are anticipating a large turnout, and we would love for as many people to come as possible.
So large a turnout that you had to change the venue, apparently, for this meeting.
This group was formed around the start of the year, end of last year, called the Hudson Valley Smart Energy Coalition.
That if you're going to do all of that, the first thing that you need to do is demonstrate to us that it's actually necessary, that there really is no need.
This is Community Power, a monthly series of reports on the governor's energy highway, the popular resistance that it inspired, and the cultural resources survey of Livingston.
Start at the bottom and you pick them from the ground, and you pick that tree clean all the way around. Then you set up your ladder and you climb up high, and you're looking through the leaves at the clear blue sky. Hey ho, makes you feel so fine, looking out across the orchard in the bright sunshine. Hey ho, makes you feel so free, standing in the top of an apple tree.
So we're speaking today with Will Yandick, local farmer, deputy supervisor of the town of Livingston, founding member of Farmers and Families for Livingston, and the Hudson Valley Smart Energy Coalition. Thanks for joining us, Will.
Thank you.
And of course, you're also a co-producer of this series. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Governor Cuomo's Energy Highway?
Sure. We're about year three into this project, and we're still looking for an exit ramp off the Energy Highway. This was dreamed up by Albany about 3 years ago in response to something identified by federal and state sources called the Central East Mid-Hudson Constraint. It's a big, clunky, technical, jargony term to describe a bottleneck in electricity transmission that happens through the Hudson Valley. And so the governor, I think, saw a political win-win in trying to solve this so-called problem by soliciting projects from utility developers to deliver 1,000 megawatts, restore aging infrastructure, and in his mind, bring down renewables from upstate down to the downstate markets where energy is most needed. The problem with that is that there really are no renewable sources to be had upstate. If you're going to build wind anywhere in New York State, it's going to be offshore, off of Long Island, not upstate. And we already have all of the capacity that we need to deliver all the energy that New York State needs. There is a kind of myth that this constraint is a bigger problem than it actually is. Not one light would ever flicker out in New York City whether or not this project gets built. The initial reasoning for the project was to reduce something called congestion costs. So in other words, during high levels of energy use, which for all intents and purposes is really 2 or 3 days during the summer when New York City is cranking its air conditioners, there is a premium levied onto ratepayers for using the system when it's most busy. This was a problem 20 years ago. No one in our group would take umbrage with that. The issue today is that the electricity market is changing and changing rapidly. And what we're caught in is a situation where the so-called solution to the problem is by an order of magnitude more expensive than the problem itself. Right. In other words, the future is a decentralized market. The future is building more transmission capacity and generation near the end point of its use. And that's where we're headed. To build this project now is really, in the simple words of Bard, environmental physicist Gidon Eschel, simply not needed.
And it's really kind of underwriting last century's technology for energy production and delivery.
Well, that's right. And, you know, before we beat up on Governor Cuomo and the state, there are some things that they're doing right. There is actually a competing proceeding called the Reforming the Energy Vision, REV, which looks at some of the future of these systems of energy deliverance, transmission, looking at solar panels on rooftops in New York City, looking at more efficient appliances. I mean, I've often joked every time someone puts a microphone in front of me that this problem could be solved by giving every walk-up in Brooklyn an Energy Star rated air conditioner. It's a lot cheaper, a lot better for the environment, and most citizens in the state of New York want to go in that direction. There are people in state government, believe it or not, who agree with us. It's just there are a couple things. The utility industry themselves are a very powerful group. I can only speculate what sorts of projects have been promised to them in the past. But there is a kind of institutional inertia that happens in anything as large as the PSC bureaucracy, where you just simply do things the way you've been doing them for decades. And we're at a real inflection point in the state of New York. We're at an inflection point in the country in how we generate and deliver energy. And it's unfortunate that we in the Hudson Valley are caught in the last dying days of the transmission build-out, and we're on the verge of building a billion-dollar mistake when we really don't have to. And I think because of that, we've managed to attract a very broad coalition, in addition to Farmers and Families for Livingston, the local grassroots groups that we started day one. There's something called the Hudson Valley Smart Energy Coalition, which is a much larger regional group. And many of the members of that group are not even impacted landowners. They're just interested members of the public, other municipal governments who see a better way to do this. So the key is to try to convince policymakers to go down the right road rather than the wrong road, which is this energy highway.
So tell us a little bit about how Farmers and Families of Livingston and the Smart Energy Coalition got started and developed.
Well, I mentioned the energy highway is 3 years old. We didn't know about it 3 years ago. We knew about it a year ago and change, and it didn't reach our consciousness until we received these letters in the mail. These power lines, full disclosure, are running through two of the parcels of my family farm, which I'm the fourth generation to own and operate. All landowners were sent letters that were agonized over utility lawyers to communicate as little as possible. The letters were full of things like, oh, system efficiencies and upgrades. And we really didn't know what was happening to us until we got on the phone and started making some calls. Once it was clear what the plan was then, which is essentially to build a third set of towers, 125 feet eminent domain land grab, we mobilized very quickly. This is the moment in Livingston where our good highway department rolled all of the snow plows out of our garage, and we got the lousy little microphone at the town hall, and we managed to get a few hundred people there, which I think was the Lexington and Concord of this moment, by the way. From there, we found the limits of what a grassroots group can do. I mean, the grassroots are wonderful in terms of attracting energy and press, but when you're talking about going up against the governor, the largest utilities in the country, one of the largest bureaucracies in New York State, you've got to get more organized, more professional. And we did that by banding together with all the other little grassroots groups and other municipalities and other successful land trust groups such as Scenic Hudson, the Columbia Land Conservancy. And from that, you get a larger pool of expertise. And from that, you also battle the inevitable problem of a grassroots group, which is that if you're so small, you start to hit aspects of fatigue and funding issues. And so the Hudson Valley Smart Energy Coalition has allowed us to be a more influential group and also to diversify our mission beyond merely don't build it in my backyard to this is a New York State problem. If you pay a rate bill in the state of New York, you should care about this issue because you will pay for it. You will pay for the project and any of the cost overruns. And if you look at the history of projects in our region, there are always cost overruns.
Absolutely. Where do things stand with the project itself and with the response to it from Smart Energy Coalition?
There are a couple game changers. One of them occurred last late fall where an environmental physicist, Guidon Eschel at Bard College, conducted a study using the state's own numbers that models supply and demand better than what the state can do. That information was submitted to the state, and in addition to that, high-level meetings that we had with the commissioner of the PSC and in the governor's office in Manhattan, I think we have managed to convince them to hold what they're calling a technical conference in June or midsummer. The biggest hope we have now is that this technical conference will truly be an open dialogue where we can look at the science, look at the modeling, find out what the best solution is, and do it. What we are not hoping it is merely a show trial where the same policy documents that are 3 years old are simply recited to us by PSC staff. So we're told by the PSC that they are interested in our participation, and we're going to hold them to that. It's not going to be an evidentiary hearing where experts, like on a trial, are going to deliver testimony, but we are told that we can contribute fully to the written record, and we're going to hold the PSC to that. We expect them to really engage with Dr. Eschel's work, and it really begs the question, why build this now? If it's aging infrastructure, great. Let's close this proceeding and start another one. And everybody that lives along these lines realizes that there will always be a need for baseline transmission. It's true that my farm existed before electricity, but no one in my family in living memory has ever lived on my farm where there were not transmission lines. It's a matter of scale and a matter of waste. And value to the ratepayer. if those transmission towers are old, and they are, then rebuild those at the same level of voltage. There's no need to upgrade them to 345, which requires taller towers or wider towers, has higher voltage with unknown health risks, has far more intrusive construction phase projects, and costs over $1 billion that you and I as ratepayers have to pay for. Yeah. It makes no sense.
So tell us a little bit about an offshoot, side product of this whole process, the Cultural Resources Survey of Livingston.
Yes, the town of Livingston is very proud to receive from the Preservation League of New York State a Preserve New York grant. It's $8,300, of which the town of Livingston, mostly through the efforts of Pam Klein, have raised another $11,000. The town will have a nominal contribution in this as well through our history department. But the idea here is to canvas the entire town and catalog, both through photographs and listing, every historic property within the town's borders. And the advantages of this are independent and useful, simply as a cultural resource survey, but it also helps in the power line fight because the more historic resources we can document, the more that we can show how uniquely densely populated our region is with historic structures, the stronger our argument that this isn't the place to build taller and wider towers in communities that literally monetize the way the landscape looks. Certainly where this interview is taking place in the city of Hudson, it's enjoyed a renaissance of tourism and capitalizes on its historic resources very well. But we forget that the rural towns, one of which I represent, have an equally rich cultural past that does not enjoy the legal designation of a historic district, and in many cases simply isn't even cataloged. So this is a tremendous first step for the residents of Livingston to first identify the resources we have, B, protect it, and C, leverage those historic resources in this particular power line fight.
How does the project stand at the moment, the Cultural Resources Survey?
Well, for those of you who have spent the winter here, this has been one of the tough ones.
Yeah.
So the firm Larson & Associates will begin their work right about now. The money is all raised. Now that the snow is melting, he and some groups that he will subcontract will start going out and actually making reconnaissance-style surveys townwide.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a year-long project. The reconnaissance phase should take about a third of the project. And then the town will also receive a written summary. We'll also receive a written plan outlining which properties might be good candidates for National Registry designation or state designation. And then we'll be able to share those findings with our own residents and hopefully with state policymakers as well.
So what are the next steps for the Smart Energy Coalition beyond the technical conference and the resources survey?
Well, if people can send in comments, if you go to Hudson Valley Smart Energy Coalition, Google it, or hvsec.org, you can find links to comment directly to the PSC. It's so important to do this because your comments, when submitted there, become a permanent and legal part of the record.
Right.
They must be read by PSC staff. The comment period for something called Part A will close, but at some point there will be something called a Part B. Hypothetically, if a project, a developer, or group of developers is selected to move forward with their proposal, there will still be a need for residents to comment. It is always helpful to send parallel comments to the governor's office. And it's a bit of a carrot and a stick message. We don't want the energy highway, but we do support the effort that your administration is making through things like this REV proceeding, which is supported by the chairwoman of the PSC.
Mm-hmm.
She's sort of new on the beat. She came into this about a year ago. Her name is Audrey Zibelman. And she said wonderful things like, we cannot build our way to the future, meaning we can't just keep doing things the way we did by constructing more and more transmission towers, that there has to be a demand side look at the problem, energy efficiency, looking at different ways that we generate power. So the governor needs to be pushed in one direction and pulled in the other.
Mm.
There's a chance here for the governor to come out as the hero. We certainly want that to happen. That would deliver renewable and better energy options for everyone in the state, but that will not happen unless he hears from the public. And I can't reiterate enough, if you receive a rate bill in the mail, this proceeding matters to you because you are going to pay for it.
Well, thanks a lot, Will, and we'll be talking to you again as the series progresses.
Okay, my pleasure. Thanks, Tom.
Community Power is a production of WGXC 90.7 FM Acra, Tom Masterson, and Will Yandick. Tune in again next month.
And you got no money. Hey ho, makes you feel so free, standing in the top of an apple tree.